I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. His real name is Justin Wilkoms, but he's better known as Drex. He's just started the regular evening time slot at CKNW with his program Drex Live. It's quickly getting quite the following. Drex has been filling in on CKNW over the last year or so, and you likely have seen him regularly on BC1. He's held down radio jobs throughout the province over the last 5 years in Castlegar, Nelson, Kelowna, Courtney, Powell River, and Campbell River, before coming to Vancouver Seafox in 2013 and then CKNW. It was on the island where a lot of us first heard of Drex when Premier Christy Clark appeared on his radio program there and was asked the infamous MILF question. He got fired soon after, and it made a lot of news. If you've ever listened to him, you'll find he's an enthusiastic personality on the air, funny as well as inquisitive and opinionated. He's terribly engaging and affable as well as biting and scathing. He joins me now to talk about his show, which you can hear on CKNW weeknights, 6 to 10 p.m., where he follows our old friend Mike Eckford, who's on at 2. I'll also ask Drex about radio, what about this medium on which he's quite effective that he loves. It goes back to a young age, apparently, in his native Australia. At Drex is the Twitter handle, and the website for more is at radiodrex.com. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Drex. Mr. Wilkoms, good morning.
How are you?
Pretty good yourself.
Yeah, pretty good.
So the last several weeks, you've been working pretty much every day, haven't you?
It seems like that, doesn't it?
I mean, you were filling in on the weekend as well.
Yeah, I was for most of the summer. I was doing my usual weeknight show down at Seafox, and then I'd walk up the other end of the hallway on weekends and fill in for Sean Leslie. So yeah, 7 days a week plus doing the BC One. So yeah, it's been busy.
Yeah, so I mean, when one listens to you. I mean, you're there, like you're on, you know what I mean? Like you don't seem like you're tired or anything like that. So I'm, cause I
feel tired though.
Do you?
No, absolutely. Yeah. I wake up tired. I wake up, I'm like, really? Can I have it? And I've got people doing work in my apartment at the moment. So I'm getting up at 8 and I get to bed like midnight or 1. And then these guys are knocking on my door to fix plumbing. And I'm just like, am I ever going to get rest? There's so many empty studios here at Chorus that I could probably duck into one of them and have a nap.
So I was going to ask you what your day is like, because you're tuned into everything, like you know everything there is that we need to know about the teacher's strike, about whatever current events.
I must interrupt you there. Sure. I don't know everything. I didn't know who was the head of the BCTF before Ica was.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Is it like someone? Is it Susan Roberts?
I didn't know who she was
yesterday until a listener told me. Mm-hmm. And I said, you can't expect me to know everything.
But you seem to be tuned into, like, I mean, you know everything that we need to know about Joan Rivers and all these different facets of our popular culture or political scene. So how do you gather what you need for the show every night?
I read a lot. Mm-hmm. I read a lot of online articles, read a lot of online stories, listen to a lot of talk radio. My day is an interesting day because to the outsiders, and I don't know if people who work in the media will know how this works, but to the outside, they think you just jump on the radio at 6 and it happens. But I generally get to the office around midday or 1. I get up in the morning and I will email myself things that I want to do on the show, like the 9 news nuggets tonight. The big story this last couple of days here has been the Ray Rice thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that needs to be talked about as well. So I will generally email myself a list of things that I need to absolutely talk about. And then once I get to work, I plot where they're going to go. So I don't have a full-time producer at the moment. I've got a couple of different producers that are helping me out. So we'd sort of sit down at around 1:30 or so, go through show ideas, book guests if we need them. I don't really book too many guests. We just kind of plot ideas. I make some notes and then we go for it.
Yeah, because to the listener, and I have friends who've listened to you over the last little while, they think it's really easy, and I don't know, maybe that's your gift, that you make it seem effortless.
It's exhausting. They always say that when you leave the radio studio after your show, you should feel exhausted, and I didn't always get that impression when I worked, like played music for a living.
Mm-hmm.
But I leave the CKNW control room at 10 o'clock every night, and I just want to collapse.
Yeah.
Because I think we've put the most effort in. I think there's more effort to be put in as well. You know, it's a new thing, so we're sort of trying ideas and figuring out what works and what doesn't. And you know, within 6 months or so, we should have a bit of a groove going. But yeah, it's exhausting. It's fun, though.
Yeah. No, it's fun to listen to, yeah. So how do you see Drex Live evolving? I mean, will everything be fodder?
Everything is fodder. Yeah, I'm not a hard news guy. I like to mix things up with, like you mentioned before, a little bit of pop culture stuff, because that's what people are actually talking about. Not everyone's always talking about teachers, right? Mm-hmm. So I like to have things on that show that makes it accessible to everybody. So you know, there's always serious stuff, but there's always fun stuff in there as well. So you can just sort of have a bit of a breather, because not everyone wants to talk about teachers for 4 hours.
Yeah.
So we cover off on the main stories. We get feedback from people, but we move on to lighter stuff as well, stuff that people want to listen to.
And you take calls. I mean, when the new schedule came out about a month or so ago, people were worried that callers weren't going to be part of CKNW anymore. But you still take calls on a regular basis, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. But I have a thing where the phone lines are always open. Like, we don't do a segment and say, hey, call us now if you have feedback. It's the phones are there. If we talk about something and you call in, we're going to put the call to air.
Yeah,
it's more organic that way, I think.
Yeah, like that woman that called in on Monday night whose daughter was murdered.
By her boyfriend, yeah. That was because we were talking about the Ray Rice thing. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know the story, he punched out his... then fiance in an elevator in Atlantic City, and the full video was never released until Monday when TMZ released the full video. We were talking about it with Bob Addison, our sports guy, and a woman by the name of Maureen called in and told us the story about how her daughter was murdered by her then boyfriend, and it was. She just called in on her own volition. She jumped on the phone and told us the story. It was a pretty powerful conversation we had. So
yeah, it was. Yeah. Someone asked me the other day why you're called Drex, and so I'll ask you what the genesis of that is.
Oh, it was a nickname I was given when I was a teenager, and it kind of stuck. I used my real name on the radio for the longest of times, but it sounds a bit weird because it's kind of like this weird sort of. German sort of German. It's a Canadian German name, from what I understand, because my great grandfather was born in Victoria many years ago and moved to Australia.
Huh.
But yeah, it just sounded odd using my last name as it was on the radio. So that I switched to using the nickname probably, I don't know, 12, 15 years ago maybe. I just kind of stuck. I know a lot of people said, "Oh, now that you're on the talk station, you've got to use your real name." Well, not really. How about I just call myself what I've been called for a long time?
And on your website, there was a clip from a caller who called in C-Fox complaining about your accent. Do you get a lot of flack for that?
For my accent?
Yeah.
Well, I've been in Canada 5 years. I'm a permanent resident. I will be a naturalized citizen by next year.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love Canada. I don't think I could live anywhere else. In fact, I just went back to Australia to visit my mother for her 60th, and I remember flying back into YVR from Los Angeles and walking through those doors of YVR, smelling the air and knowing that I was at home. And that told me I was home. So, yeah, my accent's kind of weird. It's kind of a, if you ask any Australian, they'll say it sounds a little bit Canadian, so it's kind of like a hybrid accent.
Yeah.
It's half North American Canadian and half Australian.
Yeah, that's the thing, I guess. It draws one in, because you're curious to know who this, you know, it's not a voice that you'd hear on the radio often.
Yeah, who's the guy that speaks funny? And there's a few of us. There's plenty of radio people in this country from somewhere else. A buddy of mine, Andy Bealey, works in Thunderbay in Ontario, and he's got a very thick Cockney British accent. He's a Canadian citizen, has been for many years, married to a Canadian woman. They live out here. There's Alex Hindmarch, who also an English guy, works at Fresh FM in Edmonton, which is another Chorus radio station. He's lived in Canada for years. He used to do the evening show on Q107 in Toronto many years ago. There's a massive list of foreigners, and you know, we most of us have our own stories as to why we moved to Canada. I moved to Canada because I wanted to do something different. My family is originally from here. And, you know, why not? Why not live in another country? We have this amazing world, and we have the ability to live in any number of countries when you're born into the Commonwealth Empire, so you can pretty much live wherever you want if you're willing to do the paperwork.
They used to say about Jack Webster that his accent got thicker the longer that he was in Canada. So,
his English accent got thicker?
His Scottish accent got thicker.
Scottish accent, well, they're going to be independent soon, probably. and that's the thing is, to Canadians, my accent would sound very Australian, but to an Australian, it's like, oh, what happened? It's kind of dissipated a little bit.
Yeah. Who did you admire growing up in terms of broadcasting? Because reading up on you, you seem to have gotten the radio bug at an early age.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to be on the radio ever since I was 10. There was this guy that I used to listen to. My local radio station was called 4SS. The acronyms for radio in Australia always start with a number, followed by letters. And there was this guy called Michael J. Bailey who used to do the morning show on this particular radio station. And I loved him. I thought he was so cool. And then many years later, I ended up being his boss. Because I was for 10 years, I was a program director, and I became a program director of a news talk station, probably 6 or 7 years ago. And he was the morning guy at the time. So I ended up working pretty closely with him, and he was everything that I remembered from when I was a kid. But as I sort of got into my teenage years and started working in radio, I worked for the Australian version of the CBC, which is known as the ABC, and did that for 7 years. And while doing that, I was actually doing overnights there. I was working on their alternative rock station. Believe it or not, in Australia, there's a commercial-free alternative rock station, which is now sort of hybridized into something else. But there was, the same as the CBC with the CBC local radio is there was a guy in Sydney who was networked throughout New South Wales called Tony Delroy. Who used to do a late night show, and he was incredible. He was one of those guys that was just knew how to talk to people. You had to listen to him. He always had interesting guests. He used to do a quiz every night, which was 20 questions, and it was some of the most riveting radio you'd ever hear. The other side of that coin is there was a guy across the street at a commercial talk station called 2UE, which is now at the bottom of the ratings pile. His name was Stan Zamanek. He did the evening show. He did 7 to 10. Stan died many years ago now of a brain tumor. His wife was actually his producer for many, many, many years, and that guy was the complete polar opposite of Tony Delroy. He was very opinionated. He would call people on everything. And once again, it was addictive radio. So I kind of, always liked talk radio as an option, but I was always way too young for it and never, ever thought that I would ever get to do it by this age. But those two guys were probably the biggest talk influences.
And it's not something that you went to school for, right?
Well, I in Australia, you don't technically really need to go to radio school. Some people do. I kind of fell into it because I kind of knew the right people and sort of just made myself available to do it as a teenager. Many years later, in fact, back in 2007, I went back to radio school and did a graduate diploma in commercial radio programming, and that's kind of why I was a PD. I got a PD job and decided to do that just to make sure my skills were where they needed to be. So that was fun, kind of going back to school while working in radio to do that.
That's the love of radio, the reverence that you have for it is something that I admire a great deal. There's a lot of talk that young people our age, because we're roughly the same age, don't listen to radio.
I think they do. I think they can just consume it in different forms. And you know what? Do people listen to the radio like on the FM or on the AM? Yeah, they do, but not as much as they probably used to. A lot of people now consume it via. That's why a lot of radio stations podcast, because people want to hear it when they're ready.
Yeah.
It's no different to your PVRing a television show. So you, a lot of people consume it online too. The amount of people that are listening to the radio, through their mobile devices, the numbers are still pretty high. It's still a medium that is important. I think people are still listening to it. They're just consuming it in different ways.
And it's still relevant and can be relevant, right?
Oh, absolutely. I firmly believe that radio is going to be around for a long time. I know a lot of people say, People can get their information from everywhere. But you know what? People still want to hear voices. People still want to hear people in their communities talking, and they still want to listen to those types of things. And yeah, fair enough. You know, I'm the same. I consume my music not 100% on the radio, but you know, in my car and around the house, I'll have the radio on. But then I might jump on the Google Play Music or audio or whatever, or satellite radio. But I think we're still listening to radio. Like I said, we're just consuming it in different sort of forms.
Bill Good, when he left the radio station, when he retired from the radio station earlier this summer, mentioned this in one of his exit interviews, the reception of CKNW. If you're around town in your car, say, you can't pick it up sometimes. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the metal in the buildings, right?
Yeah. I
can't talk to much of the technical aspects of CKNW and how it broadcasts. That's more of a Robert Brown thing, our chief engineer. But yeah, you know what? I think we're at a crossroads now, and I think the CRTC is about to sort of maybe address this and see if... because I know a lot of the AM stations now are sort of at that point where they're like, all right, well, we need to figure out if we're going to stay on AM. Are we going to get rid of the frequency? Are we going to flip it to FM? Can we do that? How do we do it? What do we do? What's the CRTC going to say? That's something that will probably have to be dealt with in the next couple of years. I think they are dealing with it. I haven't really read up on it, but I know there's a plan there.
Yeah. Like I started listening to the CBC after I tuned NW out about 10 years ago because it was easier to get on FM.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is I think as an industry we need to say, okay, is AM still a viable an option, and can those, you know, in for example in CKNW's case and Chorus here in Vancouver, we have two AM stations, two FMs. Obviously, those rules are those are the rules right now, and you can't really budge on that. But you know, are we walking down the road of those AMs flipping to FMs and people being able to own them? I think. You know, like I said, there's going to be, you know, talks about this in the next couple of years, maybe even this year. I'm kind of sure when they're going to do it, but I know they need to address it, so.
When you were up in Castlegar, Nelson, and then when you were over on the island, say, in Port Hardy and Powell River, as I mentioned in the introduction, what was the goal always to come to Vancouver?
There was never a goal to go back to Metro. I'd kind of done the Metro thing for a bit and wasn't really enjoying it, so I focused on becoming a PD and sort of working in smaller regional markets. The money's quite good for a PD. You get an on-air job out of it as well. You get a team to work with and a couple of radio stations to look after, and that was kind of what I was focusing on. And it was a pretty stressful job, because when you're in a small market, you kind of have to do 9 different jobs. So, you know, I had the 2 stations in the Kootenays. Then I was in Kelowna for a bit. I was the PD of the Juice there. And then group PD for Vancouver Island. So, and that was 5 stations ahead over there. So yeah, that was fun, and that was the focus. But you know, things changed, and I ended up here, and this is today.
And so being at CKNW, because I mean that's still a big deal in this part of the world. I mean it's a station that goes back decades. You know, everybody's grown up with it. That must be fun to be on the air every night on CKNW.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. Absolutely. And yeah, I look forward to it. I wake up in the morning, I'm like, oh, I get to go to radio today. I you know, I'm tired, but I get to go into the radio and I get to do a show. That's good.
And the heritage behind the station, does that factor in your mind when you're...
Oh, absolutely. There's so much of it, right? I found a file box sitting on a desk next to where my producer's going to be sitting. And I went through, and it was old photos of all the old CKNW guys and all the different Orphans Fund events they've had. It was just kind of fun to look through all of that sort of stuff. In fact, I wish there was a full-on online CKNW museum. It would be so much fun, because you can just, if someone could do like a timeline with photos and everything, it would be brilliant. It has such a great history. And it's always fun to hear stories from people about what CKNW used to be and what it used to do and what it used to stand for and how it's changed over the years. That's just fun to read up on that.
You had a funny, a caller called in last week and was complaining about too much teacher coverage, and you made a line about Rafe talking about fish farms, which I was laughing for minutes afterwards.
Yeah, well, obviously I wasn't living around here when Rafe was on the radio, but Rafe still has you know, millions and millions of fans.
Yeah.
And you always hear the fish farm story about, someone once told me this great story that they'd lived in Vancouver while Rafe was on the radio and always used to hear him talking about fish farms. They moved away to somewhere else for 11 years, then moved back to Vancouver and Rafe was still talking about fish farms. And I thought, you know, that's kind of funny. So even though I didn't experience it firsthand with Rafe talking about fish farms, throwing in little fun lines like that, sort of for those people that have always listened to CKNW, they would understand exactly what I'm saying and get a giggle out of it.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I had him on Monday, and it's one of those things that if I had mentioned fish farms, I know he'd have gone off for about 5 minutes.
Oh, exactly. You should have. You would have filled up half your podcast. And, yeah. And that's the great thing is same with Harvey Overfeld. You got these retired journalists who aren't really retired. They kind of retired, but they still blog, which is fantastic. Rafe writes some amazing columns, and so does Harvey. I don't always agree with either of those guys, but I just love that these guys are still out there writing stuff that matters, and people are still reading it and still commenting on it. It's a good thing.
Now, when you got the job at CKNW, did they give you any goals as to how they want this program to evolve? I'm sure the station would like to be number one again. Did they say that you have a part to play in that?
Yeah, absolutely, and I do have a part to play in it. But I was employed because I have a certain set of skills, and they wanted something a little bit different on the radio. Essentially, Mike Eckford and I are very similar in the way that we like to do radio. We like to sort of go back to bare basics and maybe have more of a conversation than a Q&A type of style. And I think. You know, that's what talk radio is. You know, it's not always about hard news. It can be about the lighter side of things as well. And people seem to be liking it. So, you know, and that's the type of radio I like doing. I couldn't imagine me doing the type of radio that I don't like doing because it just wouldn't be fun.
So you get along with Mike. There aren't, like, fist fights in the studio. Like
fist fights with Mike Eckford? Oh, goodness, no. No, I love Mike. Mike's fun.
No, back in the old days, I remember in the 80s, you'd hear these stories about Barry Clark and Gary Bannerman throwing each other against the wall and stuff like that. So there's nothing like that going on at NW.
No, I don't think so. No. that'd be hilarious if it was, though.
Yeah, they had to. This is from what I hear. They had to build two separate studios. And two different entrances so that they would never run into each other.
Was this back when they had the studios in New Westminster?
No, this was when they had it at the Holiday Inn downtown.
Oh, when they had the downtown studios?
Yeah.
I don't know that story. That's a good story, though.
Yeah. It's in that Chuck Davis book, which is pretty good.
Oh, it is? Oh, yeah. I'll have to get it and read up on it. That'd be fun to read that.
Yeah.
Sometimes radio announcers get very territorial.
There's a lot of ego in your business, is there?
Oh, I think you have to. I think there's a bit of ego. I don't think there's a lot of ego. Maybe there is. I don't know. You got to have a little bit of ego to do this job. Like, you know, you can't love anyone else until you love yourself, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I just, man, this is just a fun job. I've always enjoyed doing this. I don't even consider it work. I just love that they pay me lots of money to do something that I do for free. Oh, that's now on tape now, isn't it?
I doubt, of course, program directors are listening. So, what pisses you off? Because it's clear that there are things
morons.
That do. Yeah, and
then morons piss me off.
Yeah, racism, homophobia, hate.
I can't stand racists. I can't stand homophobic people. I can't stand people that aren't willing to listen to other people's opinions. And I, you know what? And I'll give you an example of this. When the whole teacher strike first started, I was on the government side,
mm-hmm.
And I spoke to a ton of teachers. They let me know certain bits of information, and I actually changed my opinion. Hmm. Because I had listened to what other people had to say, I, as a person, changed my opinion on something. Because I was like, you know what, these teachers, they need to go back to work.
Yeah.
And my opinion changed on that after talking to some teachers.
And the domestic abuse angle, I mean, we've talked about Ray Rice already. That's something that you're quite passionate about. When you were on CFOX, something went viral. I guess you'd seen something happen on the street, and you reported it to the police.
Yeah, absolutely. I was a victim of domestic violence when I was a teenager. Myself and my mother, and I kind of made it a sort of a point in my life to call out any sort of domestic violence, I always talk about it and always report on it. I had seen an incident and I reported it to the police, and they got back to me pretty quickly. And I was actually very impressed with how they dealt with it. Me saying something opened the door for the woman to walk through and make her own decisions. She decided not to press any charges, but at least the option was there for her. The Ray Rice thing is a huge story right now. We're probably going to talk about that, you know, more on my show, and it needs to be talked about. The fact that she has now come out and said, "Oh, you know, don't pick on my husband." It makes me feel sad for that woman that she thinks that is a normal way to live a life. And I think that she will, down the track, probably regret saying that. We'll talk about that more in depth on my show, but I just don't understand. And you know, I you know, after, you know, living with my mother for many years and seeing what she went through and talking to other females around the building, it's some women get completely scared and they don't know what to do and they stay in the situation because it's much easier than sort of walking out. And the fact that BC has ridiculous waiting lists for safe houses for women and children is insane. If you're a victim of domestic violence in BC, it could be up to a 6-month wait to get some sort of housing, to get out of a situation, which is just not a... And I know the government's committed a certain amount of money and some resources to it, but it just, I don't know, is it going to be enough? Needs to be talked about more. I think domestic violence as a standalone needs to be talked about more.
Yeah, and I guess men need to talk about it more.
Absolutely, and I absolutely believe that men are the change that needs to happen. The more that men are talking about this with other men and bringing this sort of stuff out into the light, the better. And it's, you know, and I know we always talk about women being the victims of domestic violence, but men can also be victims of domestic violence as well. That's why it needs to be talked about. I don't understand the Ray Rice thing. I heard on a radio show this morning people calling up saying, "Oh, he just hit her once." You know what? Even once. Like, have you seen the full video?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, and it's
like it's shocking. Yeah, like, yeah. He's hit her before like that.
Yeah.
Because if that was the first time he hit her, he would be down checking her, seeing if she was okay.
Right.
That's happened before. That full video. I mentioned on the radio show that if you got adolescent males and adolescent females in your house, make them watch that video.
Absolutely.
Because two lessons from that is, one, that's not how men treat women, and two, that's not how women deserve to be treated by men. And I think both sexes need to see that video.
Exactly, yeah. Drex, this has been great fun for me because I'm a fan, and you're just great to listen to. I appreciate this. All the best.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it as well. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. RadioDrex.com is a website for more. @Drex is the Twitter handle, and then, of course, CKNW.com. Do listen to him 6 to 10 on CKNW. Drex, join me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plantum.